There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Nine sisters.
That's good.
For nine misters.
That's good.
That's my new human trafficking.
Nine sisters for nine misters.
Vocal warm up. Nine sisters for nine misters, and they have to go, or they're all will be murdered. I'm getting all the sounds in there.
That's not a limerick, though. We already discussed this.
Oh yes, that's right.
All right. So this is the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hey.
He's here.
Shakespeare instructor William Raxmian.
Your birth name is William.
Yes.
Okay, you didn't give yourself that name.
My mother decided to include my nickname into my regular name, so they called me William.
I see.
And I will not be approached any other way.
Okay, William.
Keep your tights tight and keep your armpits dimp, because we are making Shakespeare for the 21st century, so there will be robots in it.
Oh, that's fun. What do the damp armpits have to do with Shakespeare?
I don't know.
Okay,
I saw Shakespeare last night for the first time in many years. I went to see our friend Ryan Fike do a very interesting play, but I gotta say, they're all wet afterwards.
Yeah.
You understand, in TV and movies, they learn stuff for an hour and a half. They're yapping all this fucking nonsense. I keep a script on my knee when I'm doing a television show. I don't need to learn anything. I get to learn like maybe a paragraph at a time.
Right.
Acting's easy.
Well, they sweat and then there's a lot of spit involved
as well. Jumping around and they're doing all these things where they're pretending to be different characters, so they jump from one side and go like, hey, 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 and they jump to the other side, and he pretends to twiddle a mustache, and I'm just like, this new Shakespeare is very active.
All right, that's good. Well, speaking of actors, a lot of them live in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And we're going to be there July 16th. So in honor of our L.A. trip, we've decided to cover a topic that people have been clamoring for, witch hunts.
Absolutely, because what our L.A. show is going to be, we're going to be doing the show at the Crest Westwood Theater, and it's going to be on July 16th at 7:30 p.m. What we're going to do is we're going to show our very own last podcast on the left cut of the old film Haxan.
Haxan rules.
And I'm going to do a custom soundtrack for it.
Yes, he is. He's very excited. You can see the glint in his eyes. His eyes are like two fucking silver teeth in the skull of a dead man.
That's right. You know, if you put your hand under your armpit and you can make a little fart noises. Marcus does that, but he puts his hand under his butt cheeks.
It's really strange how his legs can bend back like that.
Yeah.
You could touch the ball of your feet to the back of his head.
Yeah.
Isn't that
it's
something?
Horrible.
I'm very limber and very flexible.
All right. Let's get on with witch hunts.
Witch hunts.
Yeah, and specifically European witch hunts.
Yeah, European on some witches if you're in Europe.
I don't like it.
Germany. I'm just trying to mix it up.
You know, I would say less effort.
Yeah.
Go with
thank
less
you. Thank you.
Go to crestwestwood.com to get your tickets.
Witch hunts.
So the great European witch hunts lasted literally hundreds of years, with the most ferocious incidents happening in the 16th and 17th centuries. So before the heyday of witch hunts, witchcraft itself was seen as something that was ultimately not that big of a deal to European society. See, witches, they dealt in like fortune telling, spells, curses, and blessings, of course, but they mostly did so either of their own power or the power of pagan gods that existed in these lands for thousands upon thousands of years. Mm. But what changed in the 14th century was the introduction of the devil.
Whoa.
Yeah.
See, in the early days of Christianity, the devil wasn't a particularly big part of the entire belief system. You've seen mostly as like a trickster god, somebody that you could easily fool. He tried to take your soul, but you just trick him.
Well, like to mix them up. There's that thing we also talk about, like cock for feet.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, too, with the devil. It was like a weird base creature. The idea is that the serpent was just a base creature because he was low to the ground.
Yeah.
It
just
kind of applied the devil to all pagan gods because of what we talked about before, the shape of Baphomet, right? And the creation of the connection of the goat to weird, like, sexual proclivities. And because also they had to destroy the moon religions of earlier times in order to replace them with the more masculine solar religions of the 12th and 14th century.
Up to this point, the devil was just a real Belky Batakamas.
Yes.
He was just a jokester. He was a clown. Everyone kind of mocked him. But
he
now
was a fun guy.
Yeah. Now the devil becomes a badass, though, right?
Yeah. Which is cool. He gets a fucking promotion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, around the 14th century, the Catholic Church, they decided that it needed an enemy. And they commissioned artists to make new representations of the devil. I've got this great fucking book called The Illustrated History of the Devil, which you can pick up super cheap on Amazon. It's a fucking awesome art book. But what it talks about in there is that the Catholic Church did actually go to artists and say, like, hey, listen, we need to beef this guy up a little bit. Mm.
So what I have here is a man. He's kind of stocky, and he's got these big sunglasses, so you can't see his eyes, which is kind of fun. And he's got an orange vest, but it's some kind of wackadoo circumstances. He has had 9 metal arms be fused to his spine.
That's Doc Ock from Spider-Man.
That's a great name for him.
We want the devil.
But isn't he? Yeah, but he's evil because he's got so many arms.
Yeah.
You can't trust him.
You know,
he's got a latte in one and the other one is fingering you.
We don't even know what a latte is at this point.
I heard it could be coffee.
We have to stop hiring these future artists, these artists from the future.
And the great thing about the devil is, like Henry said, he was a base creature. The devil in the Bible is a very vague figure. Mm. Like, he tempts Jesus in the desert. He makes a bet with God to fuck up Job and the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even say in Genesis that the serpent is actually Satan.
Well, he just owned the original street cart. He was just selling apples on the side of the road trying to trick people.
Yeah, exactly. He was just getting, he was a salesman.
Right.
He was a capitalist.
Yes.
Yeah. But also there were many devils. You know what I mean? Back in the day when there was more of there was a pantheon of evil things that people had to deal with all the time until we made a capital D devil because they had to have their own Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Now, seriously, they had to have a devil. They had to have somebody that they could scare people into joining the church. Like, if you don't, because at first it's like, oh, you know, your soul will be in eternal damnation. It's like, well, okay, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
But if you say, like, the devil's coming for you, like, the devil will kill you in the here and now, because when people talk about, you know, this sort of, like, spiritual, it's nebulous. You can't really wrap your brain around the concept of eternity, but you can wrap your brain around the concept of the reason why your crop failed last year is because the devil did it.
Oh, yeah, and then, or eventually, some naked woman smashed up a baby and rubbed it up inside of her vagina, and that's why your corn is not going for it.
That makes sense. I just miss Saddam Hussein. Remember that?
We all do.
Saddam?
We all do.
We all do, yeah. We really do. Well, and just like we saw in the Satanic Panic of the 80s and 90s, which the Satanic Panic has about a dozen different parallels to the witch trials that we're discussing today. But with the devil comes the devil's minions.
Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, if you're listening to this episode and you have not put on a song that is remotely called Witchfinder General and there's not or not listening to King Diamond right now, you need to fucking stop. Or because that's the one problem with being a podcast of our nature is that we can't afford the heavy metal soundtrack this fucking episode needs. But remember, just be listening to Maiden and then continue to listen to the episode.
Saxon, go for Saxon. King Diamond, go for Maiden. There's a lot of, just look up New Wave of British Heavy Metal and Google and then just go from there, motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm. And the Satanic Panic, just to clarify, people like Damien Echols, the West Memphis Three, were, you know, falsely convicted for murdering 3 children because they were Satanists.
Yeah.
You know, according to a small town in Arkansas.
But it was also a 1970s film with a lot of teardrop boobies in it.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, and Damien Echols, I mean, him and his friends, they were sentenced to death. They were going to be executed.
Right.
Like this, the witch hunts, it's definitely on a much smaller scale. But this shit exists to this day. Mm-hmm. Like this sort of, humanity has not progressed as far as we would like to think we have in the last 500 years. We're pretty much still the same.
Exactly. We've been going after groovy people for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is going after groovy people. But although witch hunts and executions were happening for at least 100 years before, the real golden age of witch hunts began with the publication of the Malleus Maleficarum, translated to English as the Hammer of Witches.
But actually, it was a terrible thing.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, we can't celebrate it.
Yeah, we can't celebrate it. It's one of the most, I mean, it's not necessarily up there with the Bible, but it's in the top 5 of the most blood-soaked books in all of
history.
What's
the Hammer of what?
Witches.
Interesting.
But also what happened was it actually became as large as the Bible because it came out exactly the same time as the first printing press. And so the Bible and the Malleus were one of the first printed books to come out. And what we're going to find out is that book that was a step-by-step handbook for the identification, hunting, and legal prosecution of suspected witches.
Mm. Yeah. That was its whole thing. And it was written by these two guys, Jacob Sprenger and Heinrich Kramer. And one of these guys, I think it was Kramer, he was actually removed from his position as an inquisitor for being too overzealous.
You know, there are some nice Germans. I just want to say, not all of them.
The problem is it just got, it's the bad ones that make the publicity.
Yeah.
They make the newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see, there's not a lot of nice things to say about the Germans when they get into big groups.
You know.
The problem
they're
is
focused.
They just have a hard time with a bunch of just groovy ass women that they can't sleep with. The thing about the Malleus too is that it's broken down with section one is how to identify a witch. Mm-hmm. And it's basically various different things. We're gonna find is now stereotypical of how to identify a witch, which is she's a man. She's a woman without a man. Mm-hmm. She's left to her own. She's a spinster. She is nude all the time. She is a little sexually proclivity. She has a sexual proclivity about her. She is free with her sexuality, and they just stamp them down. And section two is what they do. And so it's a lot of stuff find what is interesting about section two is there's only one section about witches destroying crops, but there's five sections about witches destroying men's penises.
Yeah. Well, that's a big section.
But they are.
That's an important thing.
But they are focused on the penis being disappeared, the penis not working anymore. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that happened, they just accuse basically a woman that if they can't sleep with a woman, they show up, they're stepping out on their wife, and they're having sex with a woman, and they're fucking spaghetti goes limp. They burn that woman.
Right. Another good way to tell if a woman is a witch, if you take her to Arby's and she likes the horsey sauce more than the Arby's sauce, she's a witch.
Then count me as a witch, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I knew you were double witches.
Well, the penis disappearance, the penis disappearance thing in witchcraft, this isn't just European witchcraft. This is one of those things that developed independently in different areas around the world. When you get witchcraft, like Africans, to this day, I mean, you still look at African, like, because Africa still to this day has pretty fucking intense witch hunts.
Yeah.
And one of the big things is that they have stolen my penis. That she has stolen my penis. I cannot find my penis. Where is my penis? And that happened way
gotta
back.
Got to put a bell on it.
Yeah, always.
That's what I do. That's why I got two jingle bells. It's a hard time. It's hard. You can't really hear it on the podcast because then I covered my penis and the bells in a big old sock.
Yeah, thank God.
What I do like in the Malleus is that a way to describe is that, like, the way you can tell that a witch will remove your penis by illusion or magic. And the way that you can tell if it's illusion or magic is that if it comes back, it's an illusion.
I see.
It's very dumb. But they of course, it's like it's sexual fear of women, so that they immediately
It's just a bunch of guys with ED.
Pretty
much. Erectile dysfunction.
Exactly. And I imagine at the time, it was often. I think a lot of guys had ED because they're eating nothing but, like, valerian root and living in mud.
Right.
And section three is a legal, it's the legal breakdown of how to interrogate and punish witches, which is brutal.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is just all the various different ways to smash a woman's breasts.
Mm. Yeah, it really is. The torture that they put these women through, and men and children through, it is, it's up there. It's because they took so many cues from the Spanish Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this stuff was kind of a bit of a holdover from that time. So the torture that these people went through is horrific.
It's pretty brutal. It's pretty straight to the point.
Yeah.
I mean, now we do the thing where you keep you up with Limp Bizkit all night, you know, and then even waterboarding is bad, but, you know, like, technically it's illusion of drowning. They just smash your feet.
They just
poke your eyes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just not. You think they could have thought about it a little bit and made it a little bit more creative like putting you in a dark room and then one of them dresses as a ghost and, like, you just turn the light on every once in a while and he goes, like, whoa.
That would be scary.
That would be scary.
They
just cut your nipples off.
Pick them up by their ankles and then turn them upside down and shake them. And if there are any dicks that fall out, then they're a dick thief.
it's here in her dick purse.
Yeah.
I knew I should have thought of something when she called it her dick purse. Please bring me my dick purse.
I just don't get how you can be accused of stealing cock, but you got no dick on you. Doesn't make any sense.
So. You've noticed in the very tip of that cock, there's a bit of gum. Can I have a piece of it, please? I had an onion before being arrested.
But the book also is very specific in the fact that if you are accused of being a witch, you're done. You are a witch. And now it's a matter of whether or not the devil has silenced you enough that you won't confess and give up other witches. But either way, you're murdered. They lie to you about exiling you, but either way, they're going to burn you.
Yeah, and the whole thing is that we must save this good woman, or we must save this man from eternal damnation before we just murder them for witchcraft, because we want to save their soul, but they're still witches, so we still have to slit their throats and burn their bodies in the town
square. We got
to
do something.
We got to do it. There's no choice.
Almost harkening back to Om Shinrikyo, the idea of killing somebody for their own benefit.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what it is. So by 1520, the Malleus Maleficarum had gone through over a dozen printings, with the witch fever reaching its pitch in England with the passing of the Elizabethan Witchcraft Act of 1563.
And the Malleus sat on the desks of lawyers and judges throughout Europe. And it was legit. And the two authors had basically said that the Pope issued this thing called a bull. Pope Innocent basically sent them out and said, I want you to go and write the definitive manual on witch hunting. But it turns out that was a lie. Mm-hmm. And it's possibly like all of the documents that they had from the Pope that said like, oh, this is legit. It's fucking the shit. You guys are fucking really rocking this fucking horseshit. I mean, like all of that turned out to be hotly contested later on. Mm. So it's essentially what became like the precedent for all legal matters for hundreds of years was total horseshit.
You're telling me the Pope lied to the people?
I can't believe it.
I'm stunned.
I can't believe that tiny-legged man with his fucking hooked little slippers on and his boy penis would lie to people. Mm.
So the first person executed under the Witchcraft Act was a 63-year-old woman named Agnes Waterhouse.
It's a witch name.
It is, yeah.
She was hanged in 1566 under suspicion of bewitching a neighbor to death, aided by her familiar, a cat not so subtly named Satan.
It's Satan.
Sounds like Satan.
No, it's kind of just a slithery form of Nathan.
Okay.
She wanted to call me Nathan, but she didn't realize that Nathan was the name, so she called me Satan.
Burn the witch!
So Agnes, it's still a talking cat.
Yeah, it's creepy. Creepy.
So Agnes was not the first, and definitely not the last elderly woman to be executed for witchcraft, and with reason. Following the Black Plague, the decimation of the European population resulted in the creation of the nuclear family. Now, most of us of Western European descent grew up this way. It's, you know, the nuclear family is parents and kids with pretty much no room for grandma.
Grandma sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, no room for grandma, no room for grandpa. It's shuttling them off to the nursing home. And with society being in shambles, the elderly were pretty much just seen as an inconvenient pain in the ass with nothing to really contribute to the family's survival.
But see, at least now we put them in nursing homes. We put my horrible grandmother in an assisted living facility costing thousands of dollars for years. She sat in there accusing people of rape and stealing people's spoons. She was a horrible woman. It's just, but back in the day, we could have taken Mimar and just nailed her shut in the shed out in the middle of the forest.
You named her Mimar?
Yeah, we called her Mimar.
Mimar?
Yeah, but my cousins called her Mimi.
Mimar is just as bad as Mimi. I would say Mimi is closer to a name.
Yeah, Mimi's fine. Like, Mimi's like, that's something
see,
that
Mimi's,
like.
Mimi's to me sounds like a large, mentally challenged woman with like a with a muumuu on where you could see her nipples through.
But I believe that's what she was.
Yes.
And so scores of elderly people, mostly women, were actually shuttled off to live alone in hovels where they lost their minds either due to dementia or, as was probably the case in many quote-unquote witches, paraphrenia. Paraphrenia occurs later on in life and is different from schizophrenia in that while the patient might be suffering from paranoia and hallucinations, they still retain all of their intellect and personality characteristics.
Yeah, it was like my grandmother was talking to the portrait of my grandfather, acting like he was there all the time, but she was still a raging bitch.
Oh, yeah, that's normal.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that you get a lot of wacky shit happening in the heads of otherwise rational, normal human beings.
And, or maybe they weren't even that rational to begin with.
Right.
But they go out there. Now that they're alone, now it's like it's the witch scenario. It's an old woman living alone in a tiny hut out in the middle of the forest, and she's out there being like,
I see a vampire and he's got a bowl of things for breakfast. Mm. It's some sort of Count Chocula.
I think you're just looking at a breakfast box, Grandpa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that people, they had no clue of how the brain actually worked, this being the, you know, 1600s, and they took all of these bizarre testimonies, all of the confessions of old ladies with severe mental illnesses as fact. Like, they just, they didn't know that someone could make shit up like this, because it's, you've got an elderly woman, a once respected member of the community before they just locked her up in a shed out in the forest, who seems rational by all accounts, but her mind has turned into mush. And so because of that, that's how you get a lot of the, you know, that's how you get the stereotype of the old crone. That's how you get all this bizarre testimony. It's fascinating stuff.
Marcus, you got to remember, again, things are only as real as you want them to be. Right? See what I'm
saying? Absolutely not. There's a very concrete reality.
No. Real is just turn real around. What does it spell?
Leer.
Right? What do we do with our eyeballs, right? We leer at things, right? Leer, sometimes your eyeballs play.
Where are you going with this?
I'm just...
I think you were just talking.
Please don't arrest me, sir.
So it's also important to note that most of the information that we know about these witch trials comes from the witch hunting manuals themselves, because the Malleus Maleficarum was by no means the only witch hunting manual. It was just the most popular one. Like, there was demonology, there was the identification of witches, there were pamphlets that people put out all the time. They just write them up, print them up, and send them out. And we also know about witch trials from the court records, which are spotty at best and by no means feature any sort of transcripts whatsoever.
Hmm. When do you think the first year was that there was a legitimate expert in anything?
No, I guess this is it. 1400s for witchery.
I don't think they were experts in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, they were.
Anybody could just walk out and be like, I know what witches are. They're the ones... she's got long toes. Fucking cut her face off.
Yeah, well, if she did, he was right, and she was.
In Europe, it took a while. The Greeks and the Romans did pretty good with a lot of shit.
But I think they were still kind of... I mean, they built nice stuff.
Pythagorean geometry.
What does that even mean?
I like witchcraft better.
Because I have a whole thing with math where I don't think it's all real.
Oh,
I think
goodness.
I don't think, because if it doesn't work on a planet outside of our planet or in another part of the galaxy, then it doesn't even matter. And we won't know if that's going to happen until 10,000 years from now. So what is even the point of having geometry class?
So let's just go back to hunting witches.
This was me when I was 15. Just yelling in math class.
Well, the other thing about these confessions is that we only know either by accident or by every once in a while someone actually coming out and saying how many of these confessions were obtained by torture, either by the state or, in the case of the North Berwick witches, the employer of the accused. See, in 1591, a man named David Seaton heard through the grapevine that his maidservant, Gilly Duncan, had suddenly acquired a reputation for healing the sick. And when he questioned Gilly about the rumor, she, of course, denied the charge.
No, no way.
So Seaton responded to her denials with torture using a medieval torture device called the pillywinks.
Aww.
Yeah, which is a vice-like device that slowly crushed the fingers and toes of the victim.
Oh, pillywinks to me sounds like a bunch of sexless pink tiny creatures that just wants to teach us about caring for each other.
Sounds to me like candy that looks like confetti.
But no, it's a thing that smashes fingers and toes.
Right.
So it's a hammer. The pillywinks is a hammer.
No, it's a vise.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a vise with it's got screws on it, and it's pretty much you just put the fingers in.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what it looks like.
Yeah. It's two metal plates that you just slowly just...
I like to call it the pillywinks.
Yeah, it's such a kind name for such an atrocious device. But why would they hurt this woman? She healed the sick. She did something good.
Yeah, but she did it nefariously.
Yeah. She did it nefariously. Yeah, because that's the whole thing, is that it doesn't matter what you use it for. If it's diabolically inspired, then eventually you're going to start off healing the sick.
Sure.
But then you're going to end with stealing some cocks.
Slippery slope.
I see.
See, that's the thing. All of a sudden, she's got a fucking belt full of cocks.
Right.
All right, and she doesn't care if you have the flu or not, because she's got enough cocks to win the Cocks of the Month competition has to bring back to her witch group every month.
Of course.
It was not until Seaton searched the maidservant's body from head to toe for the devil's mark, which he found upon her neck, that Gilly Duncan confessed to being a witch and that all her cures were a result of the diabolical magic.
Now, there's no way he sexually enjoyed that at all, right,
not
Marcus?
Not even close. No, it's not even, it's not,
it's
like...
It's his job to do it. Actually, the Malleus has a whole description where there was one man's job where, during the court processions, and that in order to look for the devil's mark, his job was to shave the woman entirely from foot to head. And that was his one job. And there, can
yeah,
because
the witch hunter's like, it was a whole crew. Yeah, it wasn't like
I volunteered to shave her.
Yeah.
People say I'm doing real good at giving a close shave because I really pay attention to the details.
Yeah, well, you never know what she's hiding in those eyebrows.
Right? That's the problem. Yeah. Or in the pussy here.
Yeah, you never know.
So in case you're not familiar, the devil's mark is a spot on the body of a witch that is supposedly impervious to all pain, which is a result of the devil scratching off the holy chrism of the witch's Christian baptism. And the discovery of the devil's mark was a boon to witch hunters, as it was seen as hard evidence that the accused was a witch. And it was such an important part of the process that each witch hunting crew also had a guy in charge of this, known officially as the witch pricker.
Name's Larry. I don't want to be a witch pricker for today. It's just, you know what I mean? He bent over. All right, spread them open. Nice, nice, nice. I don't see any mark. All right, flip her over. You know what? This job doesn't get any easier, but somebody's got to do it. All right, let me check your boobies. Yeah. Mashing your boobies together. Just mashing them. You like it? I'm too good at my job.
Tough day at work.
Somebody's got it. Somebody's got to wake up and make the donuts.
Yeah. We know.
So after Gilly was tortured, pricked, and arrested, she immediately began naming dozens of co-conspirators in a plot that reached far beyond the local peasantry. In what started as a simple 16th century afternoon of a boss torturing his employee over a rumor that she was helping people out, ended up uncovering a plot to murder James IV, a.k.a. the King of Scotland.
No, not the man who's never seen a pair of underwear.
Inbred, I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Bog people.
Really are.
Now, unlike many of the stories we'll cover today, this one actually does have a kernel of truth. There was likely a plot on King James's life instigated by a man named Francis Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell, who had a claim to the throne should James die without an heir. And it is possible that Hepburn was using the local witch club as a smokescreen to hide his nefarious plot, somehow directing a bunch of hapless peasants to murder the king so Hepburn could take his place at the head of the table. Now, even though it is certain that the vast majority of people accused of witchcraft had nothing to do with the actual practice itself, it is fairly safe to assume that there were some people into some super witchy shit those few hundred years that the hunts were going on.
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, people have been doing magical rituals for forever, since the beginning of time. It only became until this part of history that it became illegal. It used to be a thing that they used to work with constantly. They have stories in the Bible where they're talking about King Solomon would work with witches, even though the Bible's like, you know, we got to kill every witch. It's like they would still go and use them. They were part of society. Mm. And then all of a sudden they just flipped on them. It's like all of a sudden they were like, death to all podcasters. And it's like, what are we going to do? What will Los Angeles do with their unemployed?
Well, see, that's the thing. What's really important to remember is that these big witch hunts, you know, we say they lasted over hundreds of years, but they were essentially isolated incidents. You know, it's not like there was like a weekly witch hunt every Saturday or anything like that. Like, it was often decades, even lifetimes between hunts. So it's almost certain that there were people practicing witchcraft throughout this entire time, quote-unquote witchcraft. Mm. But as we said before, the most likely explanation that the large-scale movements were probably just a bunch of groovy people trying to have a good time to alleviate the boredom and constant drudgery and misery of their life.
They're living in the middle of a forest. They're covered in bugs. Let them fuck.
I don't know. It seems like they're dick thieves.
Let them choose to fuck each other. And then a lot of times it's like, yeah, there'll be like one dude around that's like pretending to be the devil. That guy's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, these gatherings, pretty much an excuse to just have a gigantic orgy. And as it is with a lot of things like that, it's a little easier to let loose when you've got a bunch of ritual involved. And Francis Hepburn of Earl took full advantage of this.
You're just setting the mood.
Yeah.
They sound like juggalos.
And no, but I mean, but I also
the
say
the juggalos are also hunted by the government.
They are, and they are persecuted.
They are,
and we need to stop this modern witch hunt of the juggalos and let them drink their Faygo.
That's
and
right.
Let them have crab-infested sex with each other.
Well, they, you know, there is a little bit of an STD problem.
There is, but the problem is that I'm just afraid for when all the crabs that the juggalos are creating with each other's bodies and that are then mating while being next to each other from different strains of different parts of Lower California, that they will create giant super crabs.
Yeah.
That our government, and that will be the problem the government really will have to handle.
Yes.
Because you know who they're coming for? Robert Downey Jr.
It's very possible.
America's treasure.
Yes, he is. Yes.
See, most of these covens had a quote-unquote devil leading the rituals, which was usually just a dude dressed all in black, wearing sick-ass mask that someone had made from an animal's head. They'd use anything. They'd use a goat, they'd use a pig, they'd use a dog, they'd use a deer, but there was always some dude wearing some super cool shit.
Yeah.
And the whole ritual ended with the Osculum Infame, in which each and every member of the coven would line up and kiss the butthole of the group devil, who in this case may have been the instigator of the King James murder plot, Francis Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell.
Hey, you know, while you're back there treating my asshole like a champagne flute, maybe we should kill this king or something.
Yeah, think about it.
And just to say one witch is like, I will do something special for you, my infamous leader. Oh, yeah, what are you going to do, Agnes?
Well, that's good. Play it like glass.
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps.
I think she stole my penis.
And you know what? Good for her.
Good for her. So the Earl, of course, escaped all consequence and fled to Italy, but thankfully for him, he left behind plenty of poor people to be tortured and executed in his stead.
Oh, yeah. So they had to kiss his butthole and then they got tortured?
One man, John Fionn, confessed under torture that he had attended many meetings in which Gilly Duncan, the maidservant who had started this whole mess, was the resident musician, with her main instrument being the Jew's harp.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Hmm. I just pictured a lawyer just wanting to prove that he was the devil. Exhibit B, and he pulls out his pants and shows his butthole. Look at that butthole! Look how clean.
It's as clean as an ivory skillet.
He's the devil.
He is the devil.
Burn the witch.
Now, another co-conspirator, Agnes Simpson, said that her part in the whole plot was to sink King James's ship. Her method was to pass a cat 3 times through the links of a chimney crook, then pass the same cat 3 times under the chimney itself. Then she tied the cat's feet to a dead man's dick for an indeterminate amount of time, and then she threw the cat as far as she could into the sea.
Poor cat.
I mean, technically, the cat led an interesting life.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, the cat just, meow, meow,
meow. So these plots naturally required a whole crew to pull off. Agnes said that the cat plan was hatched at a gathering of more than 200 witches who danced drunk in a graveyard as Gilly played the Jew's harp once more. Now, this conspiracy that Agnes created is an important aspect of the hysteria surrounding witch hunts because the idea that an invalid old woman or just a simple maidservant could hold any power whatsoever, that would be ridiculous even by 16th century standards, that some old woman in the forest could hatch a murder plot to kill the king. Mm. But if that same old woman was backed up by a far-reaching and well-organized group led by the devil himself, then it starts to become a little more plausible.
A little more plausible.
A little more plausible. Right. And that conspiracy can be blamed for all sorts of problems that a government might have. And as we said earlier, witch hunts, rather than being a constant feature of life during these centuries, they were incidents that burned bright and very hot for relatively short amounts of time. And many times, said hunts coincided when that particular region was suffering from religious or political problems.
Because then you create an enemy for everybody. You go look and you say there's a giant network of evil witches that are conspiring to steal our penises. You're going to get people mobilized.
Yep. Right.
That's what Hillary Clinton needs to do.
Yeah, talk about
she wants to get the grassroots going.
Right.
Yep. For example, in Germany, 250 witches were burned when a Catholic prince was in the process of retaking a city from Protestants. And in another instance, also in Germany, 133 people were burnt in a single day following tensions in the populace. In other words, German politicians on multiple occasions persecuted and murdered large groups of innocent people during times of civil unrest, ensuring that said politicians either gained or held on to their political power.
It's kind of like they're saying, like they're, did I do that?
Right, right.
You know, like that's what they're doing. That's their gimmick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I actually think the German people just find trees to be so sacred that they don't want to burn them.
Yeah, they're more environmentalist than that.
They know they can make more people.
Right, yeah.
So you just burn them. Sure. And the fat bubbles and crackles, making a sweet pernil.
Yeah.
Well, that must be an interesting odor there. Just piles of witches burning constantly.
It smells like pork.
Does it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just don't do this. Don't get my wires crossed.
Yeah.
All right, I'm already on the verge of eating people.
No, it really does. Like, it supposedly smells like a sweet, it's a very sweet smell.
Specifically because they're witches?
No. Humans.
Oh, because they're humans.
When you burn or cook a human, it's a sweet pork smell.
Huh.
Yeah. What else?
Are there beans?
You know, the thing I find that really goes good with pork is sort of like a jelly kind of marmalade you can put on top and get a sweet and savory kind of thing.
That is a good thing, yeah.
Put some thyme in there and between their feet or something.
You'll have people one day, Henry. Don't worry about it.
Now, the Germans, to say the very least, can be an overzealous people. And Ben, don't give me that look.
What?
They're overzealous. They're full of energy.
Yeah.
You will say they really go 110%.
They do go 110%, but overzealous, I mean, I'm not sure if that... They're stern but motivated.
Which is the worst?
Yeah.
Because I would say the ISIS is overzealous.
Yeah, ISIS, okay.
Oh, yeah, they're biting off more than they can chew.
Yes,
yeah.
The Nazis... The Germans. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're not even. The Nazis haven't even been thought of yet.
No, not even thinking about it.
But the playbook is definitely being written.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just that. They're just real serious.
Yeah,
and they got a lot of tools.
They love tools.
Yeah. Well, too many people.
So between 1609 and 1616, 200 people were executed for witchcraft in the Bamberg region of Germany alone, which eventually came to be known as the Shrine of Horror.
Fuck yeah.
And the center of all this activity was the Hexenhaus, possibly the most brutal and deadly location for accused witches in all of Europe.
And it's your free band name for the episode.
Hexenhaus.
Now, victims would be roasted in iron chairs and have their flesh rended from their body with red-hot painters.
God, after you're talking about the pork thing, I'm just saying, actually, this sounds delicious.
Kind of want to lick the chair.
Their legs would be crushed, their shoulders dislocated, and, of course, they would fall victim to the dreaded pillywinks.
Oh, every time.
Huh, we love you. Yeah, so you're going to be rich, huh? Better grind your bones. You go get them, Tiki Winky.
I like pillywinks. They're fun and nice.
Yeah, that's fun. I rip your nipples off.
Oh, I see. What was that?
What?
No.
Now, led by Prince Bishop Gottfried von Dornheim, a.k.a. the Witch Bishop, it is estimated that a minimum of 600 people were burned as witches during the 1620s in Germany. Mm. But unlike England, where the aristocracy was shielded from accusations due to their ability to sue any detractor for defamation of character, the ruling class in Germany, who had originally instigated all this bullshit... died right alongside the poor.
Oh. Germans, tough but fair.
Tough but fair, that's right.
See, in Germany, when a man or woman was sentenced to death for witchcraft, all of their assets were split between the town, the church, and the lawyers involved, with the establishment claiming that this was necessary to recoup the expenses of torture, incarceration, and execution.
Distribution of wealth.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Think about it.
So this is what's going to happen? That Bernie's going to do this?
It.
Is
Bernie going to be...
So
Bernie's
going to
burn the 1%.
So Bernie's going to... They're going to burn the 1% and give the rest of the money to the town elders and the churches?
Yep, hot chairs.
So Bernie's going to show up in a fucking cool-ass goth witchfinder general outfit out of nowhere with a fucking lute and a giant, like, papal hat that's made in black.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm kind of into it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So in 1629, 79 of Offenburg's wealthiest citizens were executed and had their property confiscated, with the only break in the proceedings coming when the clergy complained that they weren't getting a big enough piece of the pie.
Oh.
But the killings resumed shortly after an agreement had been reached.
That's reaching across the aisle.
Right.
That's what's important.
That is. Now, not surprisingly, the witch hunts of the rich in Germany abruptly ended soon after certain regions made it illegal for towns and churches to confiscate the property of executed citizens.
I almost feel like it wasn't about witchcraft after
That's
all.
That's weird, Marcus, because it seems like they were really trying to kill as many witches as they could.
Don't it, though?
Yeah.
Weird.
Weird stuff.
You know what I will say, though, about this whole time period? Bad time to be a lady.
Mm. I think, yeah, what time period has been great to be a lady?
It's good now. It's better.
It's okay.
Hey, dude, it's all right now.
It's all right.
It's
better. We're not crushing their bones anymore.
No.
Not all the time. Not here.
No.
Not in New York specifically.
New York is not a great place.
The Creek in the Cave is a great place for women.
The podcast studio has been very good to women.
This area around the table is a very safe place physically for a woman.
Just right on the table, around 6 inches radius.
Yes.
Perfect place. Perfect. So women are, they're doing great.
Safe. Women are fine.
Yeah, totally.
But a couple of decades later in France, the wealthy aristocracy became embroiled in their very own rich witch scandal of their own, known as the Affair of Poisons, in which 36 people would be executed following an old-fashioned poison-for-profit land grab.
I love these poison-for-profit land grabs.
No.
I want there to be a show like hosted by Tony Danza.
Yeah.
And it was just all the poison-for-profit
land grab.
And I got to say, I'm really happy to everybody that's been involved.
Typical.
Tap dances at the end of it.
Now, after being accused of trying to poison her father and brothers in an attempt to inherit their estates, an aristocrat named Madame de Brinvilliers confessed to a crime after undergoing a technique called the water cure, in which she was forced to drink 16 whole pints of water in one sitting.
But also then Big Dog at K-Pack gave her a free Chevy Bandolier.
That's kind of fun. Oh. That's not that much water. Is that too much water? I'm always slamming that much water.
That's a lot of water. Especially if you're...
I wouldn't confess to a crime if I had 16 pints of water in
me. You're also dehydrated.
Yeah.
Also, they're wearing a tiny corseted, faceted dress all the time.
Yeah, these are courtesans that we're talking about here.
All right, but it just seems to me like the water, drinking of the water is the least torture we've heard so far.
It can be pretty intense.
Well, it comes down to everybody. It's France, so everybody's eating a lot of butter and drinking a lot of wine. It seems like
croissants.
You got to do something to clear the urine.
Yeah, I mean, okay, but we'll move on. But I just feel like out of all the torture we've heard of, this woman just had to have a couple of pints of water.
16 pints. Well, you've had 16 beers in a night.
I had it this morning. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to go to the bathroom or nothing.
Don't break the seal.
Bodies are different. You think that's what they did? They made her sit on a cork?
Yeah.
And then she blew up like it was like a fucking Looney Tunes cartoon?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I just feel like she wasn't sitting on a hot chair. She wasn't getting piddlywinked or whatever the hell it was called. She had to drink water. Anyway.
Bodies were different.
Yeah, I guess so.
So this woman, after she confessed to the poisoning, she was beheaded and her body was burned at the stake for good measure after the head was lopped off. But the incident sent the court of Louis XV into a veritable tizzy of poison paranoia, and it wasn't long before accusations of witchcraft began.
Ooh.
So authorities began to round up local fortune tellers and alchemists who, under duress of torture, started naming members of King Louis's inner circle as co-conspirators in a whole variety of plots to poison rivals, spouses, and family members.
It seems kind of crazy that you could take a bunch of rich, fancy, powdered wigged aristocrats and slap them around a little bit and they'd confess so easily.
Sure, they're weak people.
So the most well-known of all these rounded up sorceresses was Catherine Montvoisin, a.k.a. La Voisin. She was a midwife and alleged sorceress. She claimed that the king's mistress had participated in multiple black masses in an attempt to retain the king's favor over rival lovers.
It was pretty sweet. I mean, apparently when they went to her house, it's like she would use these black masses and what was involved, that babies would be sacrificed. And one historian claims to have found records that indicate that police found the baby bones
in Navasson's
garden.
Yeah, they actually said it in the report, baby's bones.
Baby's
spoons.
Yeah.
So she would slit. So her main lover, so King Louis XIV's main lover was a woman that was like a very politically motivated lady that she was called the real Queen of France. She would walk around and basically be able to talk the talk with a bunch of different ambassadors and different dukes and bullshit of the court, and she was really good at it. But she was getting edged out by a supple young country girl that he had, Louis XIV, that just seen literally milking a goat.
Yeah, sure. It's hot.
Yeah,
it's
that's hot. What you do. And he's just like, I want that one. I want one of the big tits.
Oh my God,
and
for them, that's like a porno.
Yeah, exactly. And then he cut to her, who's been doing all this hard work, all this legwork for him.
Right.
She felt betrayed. So she talked to Levoisin. And in order to get him to, instead of like doing shit, being like, well, maybe I'm going to learn this thing I learned from this Chinese guy called a blowjob. Instead, what she did.
The Chinese invented the blowjob.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's a disgusting American tradition.
I don't know. I think it's been around for a long time. The Indians actually technically did it. The Indian
I don't
people.
Know if that's true.
No, the Kama Sutra.
No, the French. The French were
the
really
French?
Good. Yeah. No, the French were all about blowjobs.
The French invented butt licking, as we know.
Oh, that's
now
very
we know
good
that
for
certain. Yeah. But so she went to this woman. She's like, what do I do to get Louis XIV to love me again? She's like, oh, we're just going to do this thing where you're going to lay down on this table, take off all your clothes. She's like, great. Mm-hmm. And then what we're going to do is we're going to slit this baby open from its pubic bone to its face.
Right.
And dump its blood all over you while a real priest that she knew comes in and reads the Bible over you.
And how does this work exactly then?
Romance.
Romance. I see. Okay.
It's really extending yourself for a loved one. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to show the effort.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It's not about what you do. It's about how you do it and what was the energy behind what it is that you're doing.
Show, not tell.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Now, Lavoisin, after she confessed to all this, by the way, those baby bones in the garden, it was said that it could have been enough to add up to about 2,500 baby corpses. That's a lot of babies. Probably a bit of an exaggeration, although some historians say, like, maybe they found babies, maybe they didn't.
Could have been chicken bones.
Who knows?
But what's a better story? And also, the way she confessed is that they took Lavoisin out and got her hammered.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they got her super hammered, and then after she confessed, she was naturally burned in the public square, and before the entire affair was over, 34 more would be burned as well before King Louis finally put an end to it, deciding that the whole affair is just bad publicity.
Yeah. First of all, I love the idea of just being able to accuse somebody of witchcraft who you don't like.
Yeah.
I almost want to go back to these times.
No, that's what it's all about. Oh, dude, you would have been burned years ago.
If I call you a witch first. You're a witch.
I don't know. I think that you would have been called a witch first. But I would have just owned it. I would have been like, yeah! I've been working on that laugh for years.
Yeah, it's a pretty good laugh.
I also want to make this like a Hangover movie where she goes out and gets trashed and then ends up.
What did I do?
Yeah, it starts with her like
looking at her snapshots. Her Ken Jeong is there. Oh, and that was the guy who taught me how to do blowjobs.
Oh, man. But while the French were dealing with witchcraft in the highest reaches of society, the filth of England were having their own scandals.
Cool.
Now, in the early 17th century, two rival families of English hillbillies from the Pinto Forest were in the middle of a feud.
That sounds like it's more in Mexico.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the Pinto Forest?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe they took...
Where the beans grow. Mm. Oh, don't you go where the beans grow, because it's most sacred land there. You do not crush a bean, you get a 5 years of bad luck and your feet fall off.
A lot of beans are grown in like California, too.
No.
Both families were known far and wide to have sold their souls to the devil, and both were headed by matriarchs that were said to be the very definition of the old crone stereotype. And at the head of the clan Southern was an 80-year-old beggar named Elizabeth, known locally as Old Dimdike.
Yeah.
And on the other side was Ann Whittle, a.k.a. Old Chaddix.
Ah.
You know you're, like, ugly when a part of your nickname is old.
Yeah. Dimdikes and Chaddix, huh? Going at it. Yeah.
Dimdike, Chaddix. Now, the two were rival herbalists who bolstered their business by claiming to have the power of the devil behind them.
Gotta have a gimmick.
But the only problem was they were both trying the same gimmick.
Mm.
We don't know what the devil who bought Chaddix's soul was like, but Dimdike claimed that the devil who bought her soul appeared as a little boy named Tib, who negotiated for her soul by saying she could have her heart's desire in return. Although what that heart's desire was, we will never know.
I like a name change.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't like my name.
I think it's a bit too telling. Yeah, I like a bit of the licky lick.
Yeah, no, you're a dim dyke. I'm sorry, I can't change that.
Now, the rivalry came to a head when 11-year-old Alice DeVice of Team Chaddix accused Team Demdike's Elizabeth Whittle of theft. And Elizabeth, in turn, accused the 11-year-old girl of witchcraft. Now, children played a huge part in witch hunts. Much like the satanic panic of the late 80s, early 90s, people took the testimony of children as fact, citing Psalm 8:2, which is, out of the mouths of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger.
It's putting a lot of credit on kids.
Yeah, never trust a kid.
No.
Yeah. And this, paired with the confessions of the senile and paraphrenic, is part of the reason why so many of the quote-unquote facts that we know about witches and their ceremonies are so bizarre and nonsensical. I mean, if you remember some of the stuff that we talked about in the Satanic Panic stuff, you know, where they were talking about being flushed down the toilets to the basements where old grandma was playing the piano, and dozens upon dozens of children were being sacrificed all at once, even though none of these children were being reported missing.
It's just the idea of, you know, kids are also trying to appease whoever it is they're talking to in authority, and in terms of old people, they're also happy to get the attention.
Yeah,
they literally were willing to be the center of a witch trial in order for somebody to pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. It's sad.
Right. Well, and you should trust children if they were around Dennis Hastert or Jared Fogle. Then you can trust the children.
Nowadays, you could trust. You have to give them a, when they're saying stuff like, when they're saying, calling somebody a witch.
Yeah, they're not a
witch. That's what's hard.
Yeah, that's hard. But if it's some, you know, pretty straightforward molester, then.
Sure.
Oh, if it's a molester, you have to at least pull the trigger on somebody. Yeah.
Now, one Lutheran minister, this is just for example, about children calling other people witches. This one Lutheran minister, he claimed that the Holy Spirit would never allow children to tell lies about the devil. And he took one boy at his word and executed a fair amount of innocent people based on the kid's testimony. That is, until the day the kid accused a member of the community with some actual standing, after which the investigator offered the kid a bribe to say, like, hey, did you make a mistake? Did you kind of mean to accuse somebody else? Why don't you accuse somebody else? And the boy took the bribe without question.
I think he did it. I think he's the one with the devil.
Here's a $5.
It wasn't him.
Very good.
And so the inquiry was abandoned, the boy was beaten, and they put the whole affair behind him. But this boy was actually one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, for particularly in Sweden, children were executed right alongside the adults. In one case in 1668, 15 kids were executed under suspicion of witchcraft. 36 others were let off with a lighter sentence, with the 9 to 15-year-olds enduring public beatings with rods every Sunday for a year.
Wow.
While those under 9 were sentenced to being beaten on the hands on 3 consecutive Sundays.
Oh.
All right. It's kind of fun.
It's organized.
Yeah, very organized. Yeah. Strangely organized, but organized nonetheless.
But back in England, the Demdike Chaddix affair was only beginning. The 11-year-old was promptly detained by authorities in Lancaster Castle, the same place her accuser was being held for theft. Suddenly, Team Chaddix and Team Demdike were faced with a mutual problem, and in a meeting of the families consisting of 18 women and 2 men, a plot was hatched to blow up the castle, kill the jailer, and free the girl.
So cool. Essentially, this is the beginning of Fast and the Furious, Bond style.
Yeah, exactly.
But by the end of the meeting, records show that the women had made plans to meet an entire year later if there was no occasion for an earlier meeting, suggesting that the plot to blow up the castle was largely forgotten by the end of it, as all in attendance were far too drunk to remember what they had all gotten together for in the first place.
But that's how you get to the point where you decide we're going to blow up the jail.
No, right. They started with we're going to blow up the jail.
We're going to blow up the jail. Like, yeah. It's like the first conversation, be like, yep, absolutely. Yep, we're definitely blowing up that jail. Yeah. And the next thing we're going to do, we're going to open a restaurant.
Yep.
Because you cook good and I'll run front of house.
It's perfect.
But things only got worse from there for the families. For by the end of the whole fiasco, over a dozen of both families were executed for, among other things, cannibalism, infanticide, and horse murder.
Horse murder?
I kind of... So that actually seems to make sense. They were eating children.
No, they were accused of eating children.
Oh, you don't think they were?
No!
Where did all the men go? Where's all the men?
They were working.
18 women, two men, they're eating the boys. That's what they were doing.
Nah, they're being groovy, man.
I'm going to have to go with the government on this one.
Oh, you're going with the government?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
They're just hanging out.
Chad's got to go.
Yeah, this is why you would have been oh, my God. Oh, you would have been
Witchfinder General.
Witchfinder General.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You
that's what I would have
been a witchfinder.
And you're a witch, and you're a witch, and you're both dead.
Yeah, that is true. He could kill us very fast. Yes.
I'm the devil called Tib.
That's what I would have done. I would have taken that on the highly.
Yeah. I would have ran.
Yeah. No, yeah,
either that
gotcha.
Or murdered you in your sleep.
No, yeah. I don't sleep.
That is true.
Witchfinder generals cannot sleep.
Yeah, witchfinder generals hate to sleep.
Always busy.
So the great witch hunting hysteria in Europe had slowed down considerably by the early 18th century. Scotland's final execution was in 1729 when a woman named Janet Horne was burned alive in a barrel of scalding hot tar for allegedly turning her daughter into a pony and riding her to a black mass.
This is my daughter!
Yeah, but what if she did? I mean, now I'm taking the side of the state here. I really can't. I could see her doing it.
You can see her doing it?
That's
she just considered her pony her daughter.
Well, you know, tar her.
So Sweden's last hurrah was a tad more dramatic, resulting in the beheading and burning of 71 people between 1674 and 1676. Germany held on for another 100 years, burning their last witch in 1775, the year before the birth of America.
Wow.
Where nothing of this sort ever happened.
Not even once. Wow. We would never do it.
There's no way there's like a Muslim ban being proposed by a front
runner.
No, we never burned witches.
We never owned people.
No.
We never killed a bunch of people. We showed up at a land completely empty.
Welcome, Matt. They said, welcome.
They said, please come.
And the guy's name was Matt.
Absolutely.
Welcome, Matt.
Have us.
Yes. Take our families.
No,
please. Would you? That's where the Youngman joke came from. Take my wife, please.
Please kill my wife.
Yes.
And me.
Yes.
And my sons.
Wow.
Please.
Great country.
We did great. We're great.
Mm-hmm. But the biggest holdout of all was England, who drowned their last witch in 1880, although that was more of a citizen's arrest than a state-sponsored execution.
1880?
Wow. Yeah. These two guys killed a woman by the drowning test. Then the drowning test is when you tie a rock to a woman and you throw her into a... It's a Monty Python joke.
Yes. Yeah. And, like, if she drowns, she's not a witch.
Yeah.
Which is very sad.
Yeah, very sad. If she drowns, she's not a witch. But if she floats, then she's required to swim back to shore. Well, she will then promptly be burned alive at the stake in the town square.
Right.
So, you know...
What do you
wish in
do?
One hand?
Yeah.
You know, take a dump in the other.
Right.
Which kid feels first? You know, it takes a village, two in a bush.
Yep.
That's
sure.
what that is. Right.
But only 40 years later, witch hunting would be revived in England in a decidedly less deadly and much more foppish manner by a man named Montague Summers.
Now, this guy is a fun little guy.
He's a fun, fat little man. Now, Montague was obsessed with witches, vampires, and werewolves.
Like Robert Pattinson.
And he was the first person to translate the Malleus Maleficarum into English, publishing his translation in 1928.
And he said the Malleus Maleficarum was one of the single most important documents in the history of written documents.
Hmm. And I think he is actually pretty...
Bordering on correct, yeah.
Bordering on correct there. So Montague... He was also a proud member of the Uranian poet movement, the members of which believed in the Greco-Roman practice of Erastos Erominos, or man-boy love.
Oh,
I thought it was like oil wrestling.
No.
But
well,
it was oil wrestling,
but it's with a child.
So and he's a pedophile.
No.
Yes.
Yeah. They were the kind of the precursors to NAMBLA.
Right.
Yeah.
So he was a foppish pedophile who hated witches.
Right.
Especially those nude, older women.
No, as Montague was English, obsessed with the occult, and was the possessor of horrific sexual predilections, it almost goes without saying that he crossed paths with the great beast, 666, Aleister Crowley.
So basically, wow. Crowley showed up as the new modern purveyor of magic.
Yeah.
And then Montagu decided that because he's not a fan of the woman folk, he's going to come out and he's going to say, I'm a witch hunter, after which they then probably fucked each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't even that he was, I mean, it was more like a chase thing where Aleister Crowley came out and said, I'm a wizard. And Montagu came out and said,
I guess I'm a wizard fan. I mean, Hunter.
And they made a nice little like chase game out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, and they just slapped each other's butts all the time.
Those
two weird, fucking bald-headed, ruddy, old English men.
Soft bodies. Soft men.
Very, very soft. Yeah. And like the vast majority of witch hunters throughout history, real or not, Montagu was not a fan of the women folk. We'll end this episode with a reading from Montagu Summers' book, The History of Witchcraft and Demonology.
In the following pages, I have endeavored to show the witch as she really was. An evil liver, a social pest and parasite, the devotee of a loathly and obscene creed, an adept at poisoning, blackmail, and other creeping crimes, a member of a powerful secret organization inimical to church and state. A blasphemer and verd indeed, swaying the villagers by terror and superstition, a charlatan and a quack sometimes, a bawd, an abortionist, the dark counselor of lewd court ladies and adulterous gallants, a minister to vice, inconceivable corruption, battening upon the filth and foulest passions of the age.
We've got a nerd alert. We've got a nerd alert.
Gregory, you need to get off of my staff, you sweet little boy. I need to go to a meeting.
Unbelievable. What a bunch of jerk-offs.
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, it's like I will say, it's like I love witch women.
Yeah.
Witch women are great.
Witch women are the best women on the face of the planet.
Man, give me a witchy chick any day of the week.
I'm with one. We're all dudes. I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's wonderful.
I like them dancing naked. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, man.
There should be more of it.
Get them weird.
Get them odd. All right, so that is the witch episode.
Yeah, witch man. Yeah, yeah, witch hunts.
We're doing our best to keep witches alive now. So
yeah.
I think we're doing better.
If you are a witch and you know some spells, send them our way. Some good things our way.
Yeah,
please, we can use all the help we can get.
Power and money. That's what we need. That's the big stuff.
Now you're just asking for money.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you're just
so you don't even have to be a witch to do that.
Well, I'm saying maybe, but then it's kind of more acceptable to ask for it as a witch.
Okay. Yeah, man, you don't even got to do witchcraft. If you're just using it as an excuse to go fuck, go fuck.
Go fuck.
Come on, man.
I'm just asking for a nice spell, a blessing to be sent our way.
Power and money.
Or just send us money at the Patreon page. That's very nice, too. But you don't have to be a witch to do that. You could work in construction.
Yeah, patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left to donate to our Patreon campaign.
Oh.
And you get all sorts of free little, you get some free stuff.
It's just that easier to be witch.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do.
Yep.
By the way, thanks to assistants Megan Fierro, Sammy Coughlin, and Alice Bennett for their help on this one. This one actually was a super... super, super research-heavy episode.
Oh, this was a bear.
Yeah.
Also, go ahead and read the Malleus Maleficarum if you choose to hurt your brain for a while. But it's really interesting to get a view into that time period and how they viewed women and magic. It's very specific. It's just got that old English sentence structure where you don't know what the sentence is about until at the end of the sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. So it takes a very long time to read.
Yes.
Trickery.
And, of course, if you guys want to, I mean, once again, we're coming to L.A. on July 16th. Go to crestwestwood.com to get tickets for that. They are selling out very quickly. There are only a few left. Thanks, everyone, for Chicago. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yeah.
We've got a ton of other shows coming up, including the fucking U.K. We're coming back.
Yeah.
We finally got it booked. We finally got our U.K. UK dates rebooked, and we'll be coming back. Go to the Facebook page to see where exactly the tickets are for that. Of course, Patreon supporters, you're going to know exactly when those tickets go on sale. You'll be the first to know, and that's what we're going to try to do from now on. The Patreon supporters will get first dibs on all ticket sales, and that's from the $1 up to the $50. You know, it's like everybody, you guys are the ones support us, so you guys are the ones that are going to get, like, first dibs on all this type of stuff, because the reason why we're able to do this stuff, the reason why we're able to do so many live shows out of town is because of the money that you guys give to us. So you get first crack.
It's incredible.
Awesome. This is going to be a fantastic tour. This is going to be so much fucking fun. It's going to be in early October, the 2nd to the 6th, I think. But, you know, you guys are going to be able to buy tickets here real fucking soon. It's going to be cool as shit. And we'll see y'all in England in October, man.
Yes, and you get half off the door if you say we're here to see the Fat Rolling Stones. that's us. No, that's not true. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Find Marcus on Twitter at Marcus Parks and Instagram at Marcus Parks. Henry's at Henry Loves You on Twitter and Dr. Fantasty.
Yes.
I'm on Twitter at Ben Kissel. Again, no to Instagram. Can't remember my password. So that's kind of screwed me over there.
Okay, and check out my music show, The Lucky Bone Show, on mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks. I just put out a new episode yesterday.
It's sweet.
Yep. And Mr. Parks do a couple of other shows together, Able Against Top Hat for Politics. If you want to feel like you're getting drunk with your friends, listen to Roundtable of Gentlemen and Page 7 for all your entertainment needs. And Sex and Other Human Activities.
For the mental health advices.
If you're scared of yourself.
Yeah. You'll be more frightened after you listen.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of new listeners there from all you last podcast people. It seems many of you struggle with mental health issues.
Stunning. Stunning to hear.
But hey, we all do. So come on
exactly.
Over. Come on over.
Not
and join
me. I'm completely fine.
You are doing okay.
We should all be medicated. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan, please. Oh.
And hail Gein.
And hail me in the quiet of the night.
Magustalations.
All right, all you Patreon subscribers, as promised, we got to give you guys a little bit of some shout-outs.
Shout-outs.
What up? Shout-out. What up? What up to Big Greg, Old Greg?
This is good. This is like we're hip.
Yeah.
We got shout-out.
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 You're on fleek.
You're feeling ratchet.
Yeah.
Oh, you assholes. You're assholes for making... Asshole.
All right, that's fine.
All right, we're going to start off. We're going to do this chronologically in the order of the people that gave to us. And of course, the very first people that gave to us was the Joystick Jerks podcast, which are all awesome dudes. Shout out to Carly Drew, Lynn Houghton, Sally, Sala DeMarais, Gary Iazell or Lazell, either one, Jason Murray, Jeff Heilman, Joe R., and just simply Matthew.
Yeah. I'm going to give a shout-out to Patrick Edmondson, Kevin Zadnick, Monica Esquivel, Mike T. Cherry, Danielle Marlin. Hey, Danielle. Hi.
Hey.
Daniel Platt, Brittany Bertner, Dick Forge.
His name is Dick Forge?
Dick Forge.
Wow.
Cooper Wilhelm and Norman Pineda.
All right, so now my list of people. Les McGinnis.
Hey, Les!
Isn't that exciting? I have a little Less is More. That's kind of a fun one.
Sad.
Allison Mahoney. So, hey, I'll have mo honey.
Yeah, yeah. Allison, my honey.
Yeah, my honey. Sam Jacobs.
Don't know him.
Don't know it. Don't know the name. Don't. Nicholas Agnew. So,
like Spiro Agnew.
Yes, but Nicholas Agnew.
A victim's name.
Yes. Shane Bagwell. Sounds like a pro wrestler. Very cool. Ooh, here's what I won't pronounce correctly. Timu Millimaki. I think I actually might have done it right.
Perfectly. Can I look at it?
Timu Millimaki.
Timu Millimaki.
Yeah, there he is.
Sounds Polynesian. Possibly Hawaiian.
There's an umlaut over the A, so it's Millimaki.
Yeah.
Okay. Simon Woolley, he actually called in one
Simon
time.
Simon Woolley, we love you, Simon. We'll see you in the UK.
That's right.
Good night to you, Simon.
That's Australian.
Good night to you, mate.
Totally different country. Seamus Stimpson or Seamus Stimpson, depending on how you want to go with it.
I think it's Seamus.
Well, for his sake, I hope it's Seamus because I'm reading it like Seamus, yes. Which sounds like a sort of a semen-related thing. Andres. There's no Andre. There's no last name there. Another secret person. Here we go. Derek DeVore Smith. And I'm done for now.
Oh. Right. We also have Jessica Garcia, Greg Hampshire, Alex Resendez, son, Keith Krajnik, Rian Marks, longtime fan.
Hey,
thank
Rian.
You, Rian. John McClung, Christopher Sorensen, also another longtime fan. Thank you, Christopher. Sam Hall, and Jerky Man Randy Katzen.
Yeah, wow. Jerky Man.
Jerky Man.
For the jerky.
Love so that guy. I love you, Randy.
I just got my own dehydrator so I can make my own jerky. Rob Deal. Hey, buddy. Feeling good. Melissa. Jason Chappa. Good work, buddy. Lou Branchot. Tom Connolly. Hi, my name is Tom Connolly. Certainly not a murderer.
No, definitely not.
Devin Seth. Jennifer.
Just Jennifer.
Just Jennifer. That's her. She's like Tiffany. Gevion Peters, Brian Maul, and Michael Trumov, who's also a longtime listener.
Hey.
Hi, all you.
Well, has he ever sent us beef jerky?
No. So.
Okay. All right. So my list continues with Sarah Class. Oh. And isn't she classy? Class. It's got a K. Class with a K. So
oh,
she
wow.
spelled her own
Ooh,
last
so
name.
So she's cool.
The Conversationalist Podcast. So huh. that's beneficial to the podcast. Be conversational. Aaron Atchison, Eric Postlewaite.
Oh, we know Eric Postlewaite. Yeah.
Postlewaite, Shelby Moe, and Martin.
Martin.
Yeah.
Martin. You're so crazy.
Martin, a very underrated show, by the way.
Yes,
I actually rewatched it.
We've also got Rafael Estrada, Jesse Rooney, Taylor Lord, Kalina Bowman, Ooh. Erica Young, Peter Whitehead, Emily Fuller, Adam Warner, Jason Laren, G,
Ooh.
Just G,
huh.
Catherine Mitchell, and George Reynolds.
Taylor Whoa. Lord, I think that's a porn star.
I don't know.
I swear to God it is. If you Google her, she's a porn star.
There's Marcus definitely a Lord.
It. Yeah.
While Marcus is looking up that pornography, Amanda Lancaster, Hales Fuller, Marwan Abu, Judy, Taylor Martin, Miss Amelia Superhero. Hello. What did you do about ISIS?
Nothing.
Josh Center, Gray Rogers, Kimberly Bonarata, Ben. Was that you?
That's me. I donated to the page.
That's so brave.
Yeah, I want my bones, Marcus.
Nikki Pook.
There's a whole box of them over there.
Yeah,
you just
have
take one.
Oh, I can? Okay, I'm scrubbing.
Nikki Pook, who's been sexually aggressive towards all of us.
Really?
Olivia McCray and Troy.
Troy. And by the way, Ben, you're thinking of Tracy Lords.
Ah.
Yeah. Old school.
Always am.
Yeah, mid-80s lady. She's from Steubenville.
Steubenville. Oh. They make the best porn stars because they have bad uncles.
Got nowhere to go.
All right, so those are the shout-outs.
Yeah, that's it. We're going to be doing about 60 of them every week. We've got a lot of Patreon subscribers, so it's going to take us a while to get through them. But yeah. Every single week, go ahead and donate, and you will hear us give you a shout-out.
Shout-out, y'all.
Martin.
Martin.
Martin. Bye.
Bye.